Artist Daniel Arsham creates pieces that blend architecture and performance art. His many installations around the globe tend to stretch the boundaries of our living spaces and reality, and oftentimes they use some old artifacts. Arsham brings his work now to Atlanta. The exhibit's called Daniel Arsham Hourglass, and there are three interrelated installations at the High Museum on display from March 4th, tomorrow, through May 21st. And Daniel Arsham joins me to talk about his exhibition. Hello there.
Hello, yes.
So you are already pretty known for ambitious installations. People in Georgia may already know you because of the 300-foot-long hole you put into the SCAD Museum.
Yes.
Which, did that work out the way that you wanted?
It did. That was a very challenging space. You know, it's a very narrow 300-foot-long space, and I was puzzled for a while as to what I could do in the space. And eventually, this idea where there was a series of walls, and at one end there was a cube, and as the excavation proceeded through the 300 feet, it transformed into a figure. And a lot of my work is about the relationship between architecture and people. So that was a kind of direct translation of some of those ideas.
And you like to trick the eye. You like to trick us into thinking that we're seeing one thing when we possibly are seeing another thing. How do you go about doing that? That seems like a tough thing to sketch.
Mm-hmm. So most of my work deals with things that we would already recognize and things that we would already know. And I like to think of a lot of my work as a kind of alchemy of the everyday. So I'm taking things that people are already familiar with.
Whether a bowl, sports jacket.
Sure.
Telephone.
yeah, and transforming them. In the case of those objects, I'm reforming objects in geological materials. So imagine a camera that's cast in crystal. And when you're viewing these objects, it's almost as if you're traveling to a future archaeological site and uncovering the objects from your own life.
And you really like to work with hydrostone, which is this really super strong gypsum type of cement. Why do you like that?
Well, the hydrostone acts as a binding element for the volcanic ash and the crystal. You know, many of the processes that I use, I learned many years ago when I was in school, but there's no real technique for casting volcanic ash. So I have to combine it with processes that I already knew.
And the other benefit is that your artworks will probably last a really long time.
Yes, they're very solid.
So let's talk about this particular museum in the High, because you were just telling me that most of this exhibit is brand new. What kind of challenges does it raise when an exhibit is going up for the very first time?
Yeah, so the title of this exhibition is Hourglass, and the first thing that viewers are confronted with when they enter the space are these large-scale hourglasses. I've positioned an object at either end of the hourglass, so when it's turned, one of the objects is uncovered and the other is buried. It's kind of like this cyclical archaeology. The fabrication of those hourglasses was complex, to say the least.
They're
quite large. And, you know, I had to find, I ended up going to a medical glass supplier that produces glass for the scientific industry. Because I needed these things to be very precise. So, you know, just bringing all these different pieces together. A lot of my work, or most of it, is produced in my studio in New York, but occasionally there are things that are outside of my own skill set, like glass blowing. So I have to find, you know, skilled craftsmen who can do that.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking to Daniel Arsham. He is, as you heard, a New York-based artist, and his new exhibition is called Daniel Arsham Hourglass. It opens at the High Museum this Saturday. So let's walk through that. There's three separate parts to the exhibit, and the whole exhibit is called Hourglass. Only one of them actually features hourglasses. Another is the Japanese garden, which is all the elements we'd expect in a Japanese garden, right? But it's bright blue. So what does the blue do for us that the traditional colors of a Japanese garden wouldn't?
So I am colorblind. And about 2 years ago, a company called Enchroma developed some lenses that correct my colorblindness. And blue, and specifically the color that I'm using, happens to be a color that I do see quite well.
Without the lenses.
Without the lenses. So I've selected colors both based on what they can mean for me, but also the material of the color comes from a calcite crystal. So The exhibition itself is titled Hourglass. We're confronted with hourglasses. It's also a two-story exhibition. So the spaces themselves function somewhat like an hourglass. When you enter on the first floor, you are confronted with the hourglasses, and there's also a child in the space who is speaking about the objects in the hourglasses from the perspective of the future, as if, you know, she's looking at a camera and she doesn't know what it is. On the second floor, when you go upstairs, there's an older person who is ostensibly in the future beyond that, speaking about the objects, let's say, with a little more perspective, but still not having uncovered their meaning.
Now, you've brought up one element of your art, which is the performance aspect. And in this particular one, you have performance artists sort of wandering through. Are they at precise times? Do they know what time to stop here at this one and manipulate it? Is there a schedule?
Yeah, so I've worked with GLOW, which is a dance company here in Atlanta. And the two performers, on the ground floor, it's a child who is turning the hourglasses. On the second floor, it is an older gentleman who is raking the sand in the garden. And traditionally, in a dry Zen garden like that, you would have rocks and trees and other things. And in my garden, all of those objects are calcified in crystal.
As though the time has passed and they've become fossils in a way.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, the third part is a cavern that you've created entirely out of a version of a sports ball.
Yes.
Does it matter what kind of sports ball it is?
So for each of the exhibitions that I've produced, I've selected a kind of idea to encapsulate a grouping. So I've done music instruments. I cast keyboards and guitars and other music instruments in ash. The exhibition that I did last fall at Gallery Perrotin in New York was all sports related. So I had Chicago Bulls jacket cast, I had a Miami Heat jersey, and basketballs and footballs. And I created a cavern. So imagine we're 1,000 years in the future and an archaeologist has uncovered a kind of trove of objects. All of the balls in the cavern are cast in amethyst crystal. So it has this very sort of, obviously, this deep purple hue.
Light shines through it, so you're kind of surrounded by the...
Yeah, it would be, in many ways, like you're walking into a kind of geode.
Yeah. It fascinates me that you're colorblind and you're a professional artist. Now, colorblind doesn't mean you see in black and white. It means the colors that you're seeing are not don't necessarily translate to what the majority of people see.
Correct.
How has that affected... I mean, but I can't get away from the fact that you often work in black and white. Is that related?
So, yes, for many years, my work was in a range from black to white. I never really thought of it having a specific relation to being colorblind. I obviously knew that I was, but I thought about it more based on the materials that I was using. So I was working in crystal that's white, the volcanic ash is black. I've often made works that manipulate the surface of architecture, and most walls are white. So colorblindness really is a deficiency in certain color spectrums. And the lenses that I received, they actually trick your eye into believing or into seeing a wider range of color. And when I got these glasses, it was a kind of revelation for me. And I wore them all the time for many months. Then I started to realize that I was being distracted by the color. So I was paying more attention to color. And now I'm not wearing them now. These are my regular glasses. But I have gone back to using them more as a tool to try to see objectively what others will see, and then I can take the glasses off and sort of work once I've picked the color.
But I can't escape the fact that, you know, this high museum is full of color. It's bathed in color. I mean, is that related to the getting the glasses?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, I've kept the idea of reduction in my work. So even though I can see a full range of color with the glasses, I'm not making rainbows now, right? So I've created a limited palette, and looking back through my work over the last 15 years, in combination with this new exhibition, there's a kind of ethos that carries through about reduction, really.
You know, people who don't typically go to art museums, there's a fear that they have to get over, that this is beyond them.
Don't be afraid. Come to the high.
Right. And this is what I wanted you to address before we go, is the people who feel as though they're not going to get it, or that the art is going to make them feel like they don't know what they're doing.
Okay, so here it is. There's nothing to get. The art that I make, and certainly the art that, that many artists make, is more about an introduction to a potential new way of thinking. And I see the objects that I create as a sort of window, right, an invitation to rethink your everyday experience. And oftentimes, I'm trying to do that by giving people things that they already recognize in the work. So people will recognize cameras and other objects, the basketballs that are cast in amethyst. These are things that people recognize from their everyday life. And there's a transformation in that that I think can be quite uncanny and provocative. And this, for me, is really where the intention of the work lies.
So in the 30 seconds that we have left, do you like being called accessible? Because you are often.
I think art should be accessible. And I would hope that viewers and people find art to be something that they can include in their everyday experience.
That is Daniel Arsham, artist based in New York. His work goes on view beginning tomorrow at the High Museum in Atlanta. His installation there will stay until May 21st. Daniel, it's a pleasure. Thank you
so
much.
My pleasure. Thank you.